This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday the 23rd of December. And guys, it's 3 days to Christmas.
Is it 3 days or two?
Looking forward to it.
I mean, three if you count. Three if you count today. Math
at 6 a.m. in the morning is not the best thing to do, I guess. I would have made the same mistake, I guess.
Yeah, I know. But the most important thing is, have you all done your Christmas shopping already? I can say that I had a very productive weekend, but not in quite the way I would have wanted because I got absolutely zero shopping done. So I'm going to have to sort that out sometime between now and Wednesday.
Actually, I got mine done in November.
What? Really?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I plan.
Well, then that is exemplary right there. And then, of course, do I really need to talk about my Christmas shopping? Because I think I've quite branded myself quite nicely over the last few days.
Yes,
I am the BFM Christmas Grinch.
Absolutely.
No, I have done some shopping. Some people in my life will get presents.
I have to say, though, I am starting to see Chinese New Year stuff coming up.
Yes.
In the shops, Cheong Sams, for example, Chinese New Year cookies for sure. In fact, I've just bought one bottle for myself already.
Yeah, you really like to plan early, don't you?
Yeah, the biscuits were there and they look rather tempting.
Actually, it's quite an intense 3 months because you go from Deepavali to Christmas to Chinese New Year in the blink of an eye, really.
Yeah, Deepavali? So what Deepavali?
Yeah, that
by
was
this
in
point, yeah.
November?
It was. Yeah. It was just 1 month apart. And yeah. It's a really quick turnaround because, so my grandmother asked me the other day about whether or not I've started buying my Chinese New Year clothes. And I'm like, no,
She sounds like a planner like me.
She does, you know. So, and I'm just like, I haven't even bought my Christmas presents. Don't talk to me about things I have to buy for Chinese New Year yet. Yeah, but it's been a wonderful 2019, actually, so far with all of you guys. So I'm going into the Christmas and the New Year kind of, I think, quite pleased.
You know who hasn't had a great 2019? Tun Dr. Mahathir. I mean, he's gotten quite a bit of backlash this year on various fronts. And one of the latest criticisms has been how he deals with other nations. And later at about 6:30, we're going to be talking about whether he should be not picking fights with much bigger nations. And maybe we'll see. I mean, I think there are arguments, there are points on both sides, but we'll talk more about this in about half an hour.
I have to add this about Mahathir, though. I don't think he's really bothered about criticism. He really marches on his own beat and does his own thing, what
Absolutely.
He thinks is right.
So what else are we going to be talking about in the next hour?
Yeah, there's that thing about creativity. What are the myths of creativity? That's something, it's a subject I've always been very curious about. So that's something, you know, that's why I picked that story. And also, I don't care that Miss America is a scientist.
Mm.
So that, you know, we talk about gender equality. But there's some interesting statistics about Malaysia as well.
Interesting stuff. All right. So that's going to be happening within the next hour. So be sure to stay tuned for that. If you want to weigh in on the conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, though, we're heading into some music. Here is Starman by David Bowie, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Love You Madly by Cake. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So this morning, we're taking a look at an article in Fast Company that's talking about creativity. And the author of this article is someone who consults with leaders of companies and on how to differentiate their brand. And one of the things that they ask is, you know, why don't you share your ideas more? You know, you've got this really great idea. Why don't you publish it? Why don't you start a blog? And one of the things that they hear a lot is they say, oh, no, you know, I don't want to do that. My ideas are not original enough, I'm not creative enough to really be a thought leader. So as a result, they've written this article in Fast Company talking about some of the myths surrounding creativity that actually might be hampering your creativity because you maybe believe you're less creative than you actually are.
Yeah, not always. Creativity isn't always what you think it is, right? There are many different things that we, I think, have assumed they are true. Things like creativity is inherited. If your parents are creative, you're more naturally creative. Or if your parents were not creative, you have no chance of being creative. Or that creativity has to be pure 100% original each time. Every great idea was born out of a magical moment, which is another myth.
Yeah.
These are all things that are untrue and made famous and romanticized by movies, that Steve Jobs came up with the iPhone over a night, or Ben Franklin was struck by lightning and discovered electricity. These are all fairy tales, right?
I have to say, when I, you know, growing up as a child, I somehow over time, I have concluded that I am not creative. I think when, you know, my art teacher didn't appreciate my contemporary artistic skills, like, is that art? That's not art. A toilet bowl is not art, of course.
It's all in how you explain it, Noelle.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, but I didn't know that, right? So, you know, when you're growing up in Seremban, that's all you know, right? So, but I did get an A1 for SRP for art, ironically. So, but the thing is, because I wasn't good at art, and my mother and my sister were good at art, so I thought, okay, I'm not creative. So that's why this question of how do you become more creative has always interested me, has always intrigued me, and I think it's led me to many things. And one of the things is like design thinking, right?
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that is where people say, like Steve Jobs, like you mentioned just now, Apple. I mean, it's a pure process of design thinking, understanding people, understanding some unmet needs, and really, you know, sitting, walking in the person's shoes.
Yeah, so design thinking is a interesting way to go about this, right? Because I also find it that it's a very interesting tool to generating ideas. And because one of the tenets of design thinking is that you generate as many ideas as possible. Because, you know, if you're holding out for that one amazing, creative, you know, struck by lightning idea, chances are you're not going to actually get it because you are just sitting there saying, okay, no, I'll wait until this best one comes. Sometimes it is just, you just have to churn out as many ideas as possible, then go for a walk and you come back and look at it with fresh eyes. And hey, maybe you'll suddenly see that there could be a marriage of these, of three ideas that you threw up onto the board. And then you have something actually worth developing.
You know, one of my favorite tactics for creativity, sleeping, naps, really.
that's what they say, yeah. You know, showering.
Yeah, any of this. So especially in uni, when I used to study for exams, and I would be so stressed about it. I one day was studying a lot. I went to sleep, had a quick nap. And when I woke up from the nap, I understood everything I was studying a lot better. But before the nap, I was in complete disarray. I thought I was going to fail my exam. And from that moment, what I used to do was I would study for 2 hours and then either take a nap or just close my eyes for half an hour, lie down, or do something else completely unrelated. And slowly, the connections are happening in the back of your mind. And you come out of it thinking, haha, now I know how this works together. I understand all of this better now.
And you used a word there that I think is really key to creativity, right? Which is connect. Absolutely. The aha moment. No, it's connections. Because sometimes creativity is not generating a singular idea out of a vacuum. It is making that connection that perhaps not that many people have made before. It's like, you know, going out and asking people, you know, what do you really need? And then you connect it to what can you provide? Right.
So Roshan, I think you mentioned about power napping, right? I think that's where the mind gets more relaxed and then it starts to connect all the dots. And Steve Jobs does talk about connecting dots. But you know, there's one company called Alessi. They produce kitchenware items. And how did they... And their kitchenware, it's very beautifully designed. It's almost like a toy. And how they got this insight of creating like an adult toys, and I say it not in the crude terms, adult toys in the form of kitchenware, they observe adults in their natural setting, you know, their day-to-day lives. And one thing they realize about adults is that we never really grow out of our childhood. There's always one part of us still want to belong to our childhood, and that's why we bring our kids to watch Star Wars.
Living vicariously through them.
So the point is about Alessi is that they realize that people like toys, and that's why they buy sports cars and all that. So they made their kitchenware exactly like toys.
Interesting. That's an interesting insight as well. So, but do let us know what you think. You can always WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be taking a look at the surprise around the fact that Miss America is a scientist. So be sure to stay tuned for that after these messages at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Sarah McLachlan, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. So, you know, listening to that song just now, I finally realized why I was so confused as to whether it was 2 or 3 days to Christmas. It's because it is 2.5 days precisely to Christmas dinner. Because that's, of course, what I think about whenever I think about Christmas. It's just the food.
Family as well.
Well, yes, maybe family too, but mostly the food. Anyway, so this morning we're taking a look at another story in Slate.com. And this is this is taking a look at the Miss America beauty pageant that was recently held. And it was won by a pharmacy doctorate candidate from Virginia Commonwealth University. Now, this is notable because there's been a lot of conversation since about the fact that, oh, you know, it's so cool that the new Miss America is a scientist, because, you know, during the talent portion of the show, she came out in a lab coat and goggles and conducted some experiments. But there has also been some backlash from the women in the scientific community who say that this doesn't necessarily help women in science. It just helps rehabilitate Miss America's image.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder, it's almost been 100 years since this was started, and I still think to myself, how is this still around? How is it still a thing? I mean, they've tried to rehab. They've got rid of the swimsuit element of it. They're trying to rehabilitate the image as in the form of being value-added and helping women and all of that. I mean, I think there are scholarships involved as well. But is this an actual existential change within the organization, or are they just trying to save ratings?
Well, frankly, I think, you know, it's quite refreshing that, you know, there's a scientist who wins this Miss America. I think there's been a lot of debate about the merits of having a beauty pageant these days, right? Is it the right thing to do? Are we, you know, stereotyping women? But, you know, a lot of Miss Americas, Miss Universes, they go on and have very promising careers. So I think for some women, it's really a ticket to a better life. So I think it's really what they do with the title and how they advance the cause for women. And so, so you know, it's really welcoming when I see her, you know, doing that scientific experiment. But, you know, I'm very curious though, in Malaysia, when I was talking to a friend, and he was saying that, like, you know, if you want to do math and science, you want to encourage women to get into that, girls to get interested in that. He said he thinks that from his experience running camps, boot camps for children, he believes that they should be done. There should be an all-girls camps, because then girls can just be themselves. They don't feel like they need to adjust their behaviour just to, you know, make sure that boys don't feel intimidated about it. But Roshan, maybe you have a point of view about this. Like, will you be intimidated if, you know, if the girl next to you was really good in math and science, much better than you?
I've always found it competition. It's fair game, right? In fact, most of my friends in school were high-performing girls. They always did better than me. And that was a point of, oh, okay, like, what can I learn from you? First and foremost, your notes are great. Okay, first step, let's look at how you study. Let's look at why are you doing this? But that's me. I'm generally a bit competitive. So I wanted to either keep up. That was the thing back then. But I wasn't always as academically inclined as everyone else.
So interestingly, I think for Malaysia, I think the PISA scores show that girls tend to do better than boys for math. The international average is boys do better than girls. So that's something going on there. For science, girls outperform boys far more than how girls outperform boys according to an international standard. So there's something to be said about how the Malaysian education system seems to suit the girls better.
Yeah, so when it comes to beauty pageants, on the one hand, looking at Miss America, there is a part of me that says, great, representation, because it's not often that you see something like this, as science kind of almost put forward as an attractive trait in a competition where it's all about attractiveness. And, you know, I have my own issues with beauty pageants. But on the other hand, you know, it is unfortunate that a lot of women still struggle to make the case that they should be going into math and science. And hopefully this is something that we do see change over the next couple of years, hopefully faster. It's already started changing, but perhaps that change can be accelerated. But do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on the 6:30 news now. But first, here is Aretha Franklin and the Eurythmics with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Gone With The Wind Is My Love by Rita and the Tiaras. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, our Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, he's no stranger to picking fights. But his tendency to do so has ensured that he's come under fire in recent days, particularly right now from MCA President Dato' Sri Wickasiang, who's been saying, you know, don't maybe pick fights with countries and cause diplomatic disasters. And I say diplomatic disasters in quotes, particularly in this time of economic uncertainty. And looking at this, you know, I'm of two minds, because I see where he's coming from in terms of, you know, the economic uncertainty of it. You want stability. But at the same time, you know, why he is bringing this up is because Tun Dr. Mahathir raised the issue of the citizenship bill in India at the KL summit over the weekend. And that obviously caused some friction with India. So, you know, these are also worthwhile issues to be championing. So where's the balance here?
I don't know where the balance is. Basically, it comes down to what your priorities are at the current moment, because right now we're facing an economy that's not going anywhere at this present point. Yes, we're still seeing growth, but sentiment is bad. And I mean, no, you don't need to go anywhere further than looking at the KLCI. It's, I think, 5% down or 6% down at this point to see sentiment in the market. People aren't sure where things are going. Incomes have been not growing as well. And it, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not Pak Tan Harapan's fault that all of that. Maybe the sentiment part might be their fault. But you have to pick your fights, right? Is this the hill you want to die on? Yes, Tun Dr. Mahathir is seen as one of a big Muslim leader in the world. But we are not the biggest Muslim nation. There is Indonesia, there is Saudi Arabia. These are countries with far bigger economic powers and bilateral relationships. Why aren't they saying anything? And then the other big thing here is that it's so easy to criticize India, but why haven't you criticized China on the Uyghur issue openly? Mm-hmm. You know, you've gone to the UN and talked about Kashmir.
And you've talked about the Rohingya issue at multiple international platforms.
So I guess the question is here, is it selective? Because he has said in the past that we can't pick fights with China. So I guess it's how he wants to be looked, or I guess whether whether this is a convenient issue to talk about for him.
Well, India is also a large trading partner, right? So although China is much bigger, the point is it's long-term and short-term strategic interests. That's what our foreign policy should guide us on what we say. But I think Mahathir, due to his combative nature, he tends to march on his own beat. But I do remember the time when he spoke out against the British, and there was this Buy British Last campaign. I was in university at the time. And I remember my classmate, a Malay girl, when she because it was big news, right, also in the UK, and she, my classmate was walking down the street, and one British boy stopped her and said, "Are you Malaysian?" And she said, "Yes." And then he proceeded to tell her that, "Oh, I think you should go back to your country." So, you know, you will get this kind of thing when that kind of reaction. But I'm not saying that he should not have had that campaign. But, you know, there are some implications, even down the man in the street, right? But having said that, I am proud of the occasions where he has sometimes spoken out. We do need to sometimes tell the Americans and tell the Europeans to stop pushing us around. And I only wish that more Asian leaders will actually also stand firm on their ground. And maybe they should be more coordinated through ASEAN, for example. If not, you know, you have Americans and Europeans simply just championing their interests. And we see that when they signed the Plaza Accord, how they bullied the Japanese into appreciating their yen. And also now what we're seeing, the trade war, how they are, you know, putting pressure on China in the case of Huawei.
Yeah, I think overall for me, it is important that these issues continue to be spoken about, and that someone is at least putting the opinions and the stance of smaller countries on the map, you know, at international forums. Because, you know, international forums, what else is their purpose than to than to allow smaller countries to have a say? And, you know, even in his first tenure, Tun Dr. Mahathir was very famous for being very outspoken and being, as you said, you know, a primary Muslim leader. So the fact that he appears to be looking to continue this, on the one hand, yes, it's good. You know, you're talking about issues that are important because people are dying, you know, in these places. And the only hope is that you don't necessarily talk about the issues that are convenient to you. You know, talk about the ones that are inconvenient to you, particularly because if, you know, hoping in the hopes that what you say will keep it in the international attention, and in the hopes that eventually something will be done. I think that's generally all we can ask for at times like this. The problem is, what kind of economic backlash will this have, and how well can you weather it?
And that's the question at the end of the day, at whose expense, right? Now, Tun Dr. Mahathir can stand up for everyone else, but if he's not looking after the needs of his own people, then we have an issue, because principles are fine and great and nice, but they're not, they won't trump needs.
They won't fill your rice bowl.
They won't fill your rice bowl, and they're not going to substitute resources and food, right? And a lot of people are feeling the pinch.
Yeah, so I think it's how you want to approach this, right? It comes down to our foreign policy or the lack of it for Malaysia. So, you know, do you engage publicly through the media, or do you engage behind the scenes? And I think, like Singapore, for example, Lee Hsien Loong has a way of couching his messages when he tries to, you know, tell the Americans to back off or the Europeans to back off. But, you know, there's a way to communicate all that. But, you know, Mahathir, Tun Mahathir, he comes from a generation where I'm just going to speak my mind.
Yes, indeed he does. But you know what? Do let us know what you think. Speak your mind to us. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on a few messages now, and then we'll be taking a look at social media as well as the front pages of the newspapers. So be sure to keep it here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Victor Yara's Hands by Calexico, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Rushen and Noel. Now, thank you very much for your tweets and WhatsApps this morning. We've had a couple of social media responses to the discussions that we've had. So we've been talking about creativity, we've been talking about women in science, and we've also been talking about Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and whether or not he should stop picking fights with other countries, particularly in this period of economic uncertainty. And so Ramli Sirap has weighed in on the Tun Mahathir discussion to say that if Tun really wants to be the David who slays the Goliaths of this world, he ought to do it across the board and not often only on a religious basis. And I think this is a good point, because there are a lot of causes that we could be championing. Why only pick them on a religious basis? But on the other hand, you know, there is also the argument to say you do have to pick your battles. And if you wanted to fight every battle there was, he probably wouldn't have time to run a country, right? So that, I guess that would be the reservation there. Nevertheless, it's a good point. And Everbole also says on the subject of creativity, finding new ways of doing things more efficiently and effectively is what he calls creative. So he can't draw a circle to save his life, but he says he's creative in solving problems. I think that's a good point.
Creativity, right? Problem solving is creativity. It's anything where you are making connections and 1 + 1 = 3 is creativity. You're adding value to that that problem. But you know what doesn't require creativity? Adhering to the smoking ban that's coming in January 1st. Enforcement is going to kick in. And this is the front page of The Star. Enforcement is kicking in on January 1st. And although that is the case, some eateries are still facing problems with errant smokers. I think we talked about this last week. And they've got the whole front page and page 6 of The Star is entirely on this, from still at some people still stubbornly smoking to eateries not wanting to be fined because their patrons are smoking. And these are eateries that have done whatever they can. They've put up the sign. You know, some customers can be very, very stubborn. And Dr. Lee Boon Chye, who's the Deputy Health Minister, has said that those who are the eateries that are cooperative, who've done everything that they can do to make sure that to help enforce this, will not be summoned as well. So I guess that's fair, because I mean, if anyone who's worked in the service industry can understand how difficult customers can be.
Yeah, you know, looking at this, right, I think in KL eventually you'll find maybe more people will comply, but I think in the smaller towns, I hazard to guess that it may not be that easy to enforce. I mean, would there be, how strong would the enforcement be?
Yeah, I think that's why they extended the grace period, because they wanted to do a roadshow and campaign outside the city, because there wasn't enough awareness. And that's what the eateries are asking for, actually, a more concerted, a better awareness campaign.
More cohesive. Now, the Malaysian Reserve, speaking of kind of cohesive responses, has gone with the headline, "No official talk with MOT on the Mavcom-CAM merger." So the Malaysian Reserve spoke to the Malaysian Aviation Commission to follow up on this discussion over whether or not the two regulators would eventually be merged to become one single entity. And Mavcom have apparently said that no official discussion has yet been initiated, and it remains in the dark over the matter. So this is something that we saw Mavcom come up with a statement about it, a letter from Dr. Nungsari, I think about a week or two ago. And it is surprising that they still haven't met with the Ministry of Transport to actually hash things out, because you can imagine, I would imagine that, you know, at least meet with the MOT to allay some of the uncertainties that surround this merger, right? Because a lot of people still don't know what's going on. You know, is Mavcom going to be subsumed by CAM, integrated into CAM? What's going to happen to the employees? You know, who has the expertise? Is the regulatory asset back framework going to continue? All of this is still up in the air. So I can imagine there needs to definitely be some certainty about this.
Yeah. So especially for the employees, right? If there are tasks that are where there are duplicates, some people may lose their jobs. But I know what's the solution to these things. Hire a consultant. A management consultant, and preferably one of these top-tier firms.
Absolutely. When all else fails, turn to consultants.
Yeah, well, speaking about consultants and processes, EPF says sorry to bedridden cancer patients and family. I think this was quite viral on social media, especially when the patient's sister, Noshila Abdullah, had posted this on her, I think it was her Facebook, and she said that her sister had to be at the EPF office in person for a thumbprint scan before she could withdraw the balance from her EPF account, one which was about 10,000 ringgit, for her medical bills. Now, I think Noshila had asked if EPF, an officer, could come to the house and, you know, do the thumbprint scan, simply because the sister is not particularly mobile. But the EPF told her that no, she has to show up in person to do this. I mean, this is where SOP, standard operating procedures, are taken too far. And I think EPF had profusely apologized for this, and they said they would definitely look at into how they, you know, the processes, the SOPs. You know, common sense has to override, right?
Yeah, wasn't there something about there was actually a manual way to do it, but it would take longer, but it was never communicated to them, which I guess is a problem in a failure in communication there.
It is. And it's also sometimes, you know, I do think that we as a country, we tend to fall back on bureaucracy and on standard operating procedures perhaps too much, because there is something to be said for adapting to the circumstances that you're presented with, right? And I have seen before in cases where relatives of mine were similarly bedridden, not particularly mobile, the banks would come to them. They'd send officers to conduct thumbprint scans because for some reason they couldn't sign anymore, you know, sign their name. So it was, the banks just said, when we explained the situation to them, they said, okay, it's all right, we'll handle it, we'll send someone to you. It was it made things very easy for the people involved. And when you have someone who is, when you have a relative who is in this very difficult situation, they're facing, you know, potentially in some cases an end of life, how difficult is that? You are already struggling with that emotionally and psychologically. You don't want to have to deal with bureaucracy on top of it. So, you know, in as much as possible, make life easier for these people who are already suffering.
Well, speaking about banks, you know, they're trying to digitalize everything, but, you know, there's also this customer base that's aging, and when they go into the branches, they will still need help, right? So I think banks still need to have, these processes to cater for unique customer needs.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for your messages this morning on social media. That is all we have from the papers, because we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news. After that, the business end of the morning run. But first, here is Little Saint Nick by the Beach Boys, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.